Start off, I really appreciate all of the information that we received based on our request.
Jackie, excuse me, can I get a roll call really quick?
Oh, yes. Just up here?
Yes.
Okay. Robert Hudson's not here. Tanya Peacock, present. Kelly Inman, not here. Charles Shirley, not here. Jackie Williams, present. Jason Walker, not here. Bob Bagley is not here yet.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. So I know that some of the items that we requested, especially during the regular board meeting, I did get that in the email from James, and I appreciate that very much. I've been going through some of it.
Excellent.
I'll definitely let you know if I have any questions that come out of it.
Sure.
So this meeting is not going to last long. Tanya and I will be meeting to go over a lot of this stuff to see if anything flows out of it. I did have questions on the remote work schedules. So is it assumed that every role is times one except when it says times two?
Yes, ma'am. So controller is one where it says senior accountant. There's two of those. AP specialist, two of those, and so on throughout billing data entry.
So times four, times
yes.
Three. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to understand
yes,
that.
Ma'am.
Can I ask, what are the reasons for letting people work remotely?
This began during COVID when we tried to limit the access to the building and there was no more forward facing. And what came from that is many positions are actually more productive when they're working from home than from here. When they have projects or just routine tasks to do, they're able to get more accomplished at home. They're willing to come to the building as our guideline for work from home conditions. You have to be able to report to the building within 90 minutes if called. And if your computers aren't working, you either have to take PTO or come in. So there's a lot of things that go around that. If they're not meeting their productivity standards, they're brought back into the office. Sometimes until they get their processes down and we correct that issue, sometimes permanently, sometimes they're able to go back home after that. With our parking situation, it's also very helpful so that we can continue to have classes and meetings here for people that are off duty. Particularly in public health, they're able to accomplish a great deal at home versus being here in the office.
So are all of these positions like controller? Is there just one controller and that person's allowed? Are they multiple controllers and only one of them are allowed?
There's one controller.
Brett, speak to that.
There's one controller.
Okay. So do you understand what I'm saying? So on the senior accountants, are there five and two get to work?
There's two.
Okay.
There's two. I did not list the positions that work from here in those departments. But I can add that. I have that information as well.
It's more that I'm wondering how it's decided. Is it based on seniority, or how do you decide who gets to work at home and who works here?
It's basically, for the most part, positions that can work from home, we let them work from home at least some part of the time. The positions that work best from home are positions that have projects, like accounting, for instance. Like, you know, you've worked for major corporations, and a lot of times their accounting department may be in Europe or in Asia, because a lot of what they do, you can track productivity on the computer. So that's what we found has worked well for us. In accounting, we let people work from home as long as they're doing their job, and we have people who come in so that we can touch base face-to-face with them. Brett spends a lot of time doing phone meetings with his group. There, if a person in accounting wants to work from the office, or that's true in any position, we let them work from the office. Brett has one accountant who feels...
They're not having a bid for the right to do it. It's not based on seniority
no.
or anything like that.
No, it's not.
No, ma'am. It's based on productivity and whether your workload allows you to do that. So for some positions, it's very important to be in the office because your role is to meet with the public or staff that come in as needed for guidance or any of those things. And that doesn't lead well to you being at home. So
good example of that would be the HR department. For the most part, they've got to be here a lot of the time to be able to meet people who have questions or concerns, and that's difficult to do if they're not here. They do work occasionally a day at home because they'll have a project that they really need to do. It's a project that where our productivity can be checked on the computer. We let them go home so that they can get that work done because they, especially our two senior people, they have lots of interruptions all day long.
So everyone of the same type, unless they've demonstrated position type, unless they've demonstrated that they're unable to meet productivity targets, is afforded the opportunity to work.
Yeah, of the positions we have listed. A good example of that would be the billing department. In the billing department, like accounting, it's very easy to see how productive they are by tracking what's going on in the computer system. And so our Rhonda, our manager for billing, she has targets that they have to meet for each position. If they don't meet targets or they're having a difficult time with their work, quality drops. She brings them into the office and they'll work from the office until they can get their productivity back up. Then we have a couple of people, four or five people in the department that prefer to work in the office, and so we allow them to come into the office, and they work actually in the office with the manager and the assistant manager.
Okay, so the only comment I might make is I was a manager for many years, and I know I had, you know, Sue over here who got all the work done, but, I mean, just the bare minimum, and then you have Bob over here who, you know, he could take everything you gave him and ask for more. So do you feel like you lose anything by them not being here when they get assigned work done that they couldn't still be? Because you're getting paid for, to me, you're getting paid for 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, and not just for a certain output. Is that the different philosophy here?
No, the output. The philosophy is here that if you're an hourly employee, you need to be productive for the hours that you're here. And we bring employees in, they work from here, then they work home. And so we have, our people have a really, and our employees, particularly in billing, they've been there for a long period of time. The managers have a really good idea of what their capabilities and what their productivity is. And so because of that, you know, they've worked with them for a long time before COVID. They're able to work with them. We also, they work better because they've been here a long time, and so there's less visiting and more working when they're working from home. I don't know how to say it any straighter than that. So actually, we see that our productivity and our capabilities for our people not making mistakes improves for the most part when they work at home. We do bring them in for quarterly meetings for the day, and so they do have a chance to meet at least with everybody in the department once a quarter.
I don't think I'm going to get in the weeds anymore. Do you have any questions?
Not on that. Okay.
Jump to item A on the exit interviews.
Yep.
So we received that. So I do have a couple questions on that. So does everyone complete an exit interview? Is everyone required to complete an exit interview?
No, ma'am. We don't require everyone, but we do give them the opportunity to complete one.
Okay. So if I'm looking at this correctly, so there's 12 exit interviews. Is that what
Yes, ma'am.
I'm reading that correctly. Okay,
so
12 exit interviews, and then the number of employees that departed were, doing quick math, 49?
During this time period, the May, June, and July, there were 26 that left, and 22 were voluntary, And of those 22, 12 completed exit interviews.
Thank you.
Yes.
I would like to add, because she won't brag on their department, that is a 54.55% completion, and that is up due to some language they changed when they suggest that from 39% the previous quarter. So they're making strides in getting more of those people to come in and do those than they have been in the past by a simple change of language.
Thank you. Yeah, I would think that would be very helpful because, I mean, we all know that some employees may be hesitant when on the job to say, make comments or talk about their unhappiness in one area or another. But when they're leaving, they've got nothing to lose because, you know, so I just think the more we get the more clear, we'll understand why people are leaving. Yeah.
I would like to add that sometimes, too, there is, like, someone on this list, they didn't complete one. They left, and not on bad terms. They just chose something different, and now they have applied to come back. So, and they haven't even been gone 90 days. Yeah. So there are some, too, that don't complete one. So
that's the grass is greener on the other side, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Williams, can I get you to acknowledge Mr. Bagley and the time?
Mr. Bagley is now present. Can you say here?
Here.
It's 3:11. Better late than never. Thank you. Was there formal? Am I not seeing a formal exit interview? Is that what's behind the? Oh, okay, that's what's behind this. Okay. Okay. I'm studying on that. Okay, the next item. Overall impact of how departing personnel affect our schedules, the time for onboarding, training, gaps in coverage, etc. Some of the things Mr. Campbell sent me, Chief Campbell sent me, explained some of that, so we're going to do a deep dive into it. We may have more questions, but...
Yes, ma'am.
You know, because to us, you know, you've got a class going on, and you've lost people, but what does that look like in real time? How long are you actually having to wait to...
Fill the spot.
So
sure.
I'm trying to get understanding of gaps and stuff.
Yes, ma'am. If there's anything that Chief Seek and I can provide to help, please let us know.
Okay. We'll sit
Happy
down
to.
And deep dive into it. It may be October because I'm gone a lot this month, but
sure.
don't worry about
we'll
it.
We'll be ready when you are. We'll be ready when you are.
Okay. That sounds good. Okay. Did you have anything, Tanya? Provide an overtime report. How much are we spending on overtime to cover the gaps? Did we get that?
A specific overtime report we did not provide in the packet. We have just our general financial, like our ledger that's monthly, and it shows by department, which I can pull up. It depends on how you want to see the information.
Yeah, we're basically trying to determine if we're trying to run too lean and then we're going to pay overtime for people to fill gaps. We'd like to understand what that looks like.
Sure.
It's better to have more people and not have gaps, you know, which gaps cause a whole lot of issues. So.
Absolutely. So for us in general, when we look at, say, I'm on Medic 11 and I'm the attendant paramedic and I choose to leave. When I leave MCHD, who fills that spot is something that we don't look at that granular daily. We look at it on a macro level because the way that we track overtime as a first responder when you work 24 hours or 12-hour shifts, overtime gets very complex very quickly. So, for example, the people that are on debit day have about 400 hours of overtime that's built into their pay annually because they work 48 hours one week, et cetera.
That's not what we're looking for.
I know. I'm just trying to explain the nuances of overtime, and then I'll show what she's actually. I just want to get there so that they have some perspective of how we track overtime. So if I leave and then they need to fill my shift tomorrow and there's an EMT who says I'll work overtime, that EMT is going to fill my spot cheaper than it would have been for me to fill it because I'm a medic. So it becomes very nuanced very, very quickly. So we don't track it specifically by when James leaves, how much does it cost? We certainly can, just the size of the organization. We track it on a macro level. So can you see this on your computer screens? I don't know if it will share or not.
It should be on your screen.
Okay, I got it pulled up.
Is it
Yeah, so. I'm not sure how to get it on the screen.
We'll hit the back button.
Are you going to show the five-year reduction of growth and the 11 and overtime to both the same?
Yep, sorry.
Think it's been very.
Thank you.
Attentive to not having third ride.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
All right, I'm with you.
Okay.
And now that, I just want to add, now that you've seen that, this is in your board meet book every month.
Okay.
So these things that he's showing you are available to you.
So this would be alarm. This is July financials for alarm. So then when we look at overtime and alarm, there's regular pay here and then overtime pay. Overtime pay for the month was $15,000 the month. And then you look at year-to-date actual, $162,000 versus the budgeted number, which is right here of $142,000. So we've spent 113% of our overtime budget in alarm for several factors. One, there was a training class that went to overtime that we needed to do the training, and we didn't budget that for overtime. And the other is they are short-staffed. So when we look at it on a macro level, that's how we're looking at overtime cost overall.
We're looking more for a micro to find out how much we're spending on overtime, filling slots where people aren't showing up for work or we've got openings.
Sure. So that's not something we've historically tracked, but it's something that if the board wishes us to look at a micro level for one person or one spot or empty spots.
Well, it all comes back down to staffing again. Yes. To make sure. I mean, we discussed this last week, I believe, where we used to run 100, 105, 110% overage as far as employees.
Sure.
To be able to take care of that and meet our needs. And now we're not anywhere close to that. We're not even at 100%.
You want to pull up your scheduling page? We're actually close. That's, we just hired 38, so that we're
right
incrementally.
Now,
we are.
Yeah. But how long have we been running that we haven't been there?
I mean, we started off the year Q1 in a really good spot from staffing, and then Q2, Q3, we've started to see it. We started to see some turnover, and which is why we've had to bring in the biggest class we've ever brought in at 38. So we hope to bring in this class, one more class, and we'll see what happens. We don't want to have to keep hiring classes of 38.
Exactly.
That's challenging.
Yeah.
You're adding units, though, too, right?
But we're adding units and we're adding people, and we've got to work on retention as much as we have to work on recruitment.
Right.
So if I may, and I'm sure James is going to answer a lot of questions at a detail level, but there's, when Chief Campbell talks about the complexities of overtime in a 24-hour operation, it really is almost impossible to look at a micro level. And I can give a few examples, and I can also speak to kind of the how we staff 105% or whatever. And so when you see a budget number, and we're going to budget X number of people for the year, right? And you see that on that one page. That's really kind of a target. But the truth is, we're going to sine curve around that because it's never static. You've got 2 to 3 people who are going to leave the organization in a given month. And you're going to, and so think about if this is January, by April 1st, you may have 9 fewer people than you did it on January 1st because of attrition. But at the same time, you're going to have a hiring class. And so you're kind of throwing the football out in front of the runner. You're trying to get out there and have enough people. But by the time you hire, 20 people, but you've got 9, so you're net ahead 11. So it's constantly moving. And then just because somebody is hired doesn't mean that they're available to work, right? So you have staffing level of X number of medics, but some number of those are going to be out on FMLA, unable to work. Some number of those are going to call in sick that day. Some number of those will have planned to have vacation that day. They have ways of managing vacation days, but those are just some of the challenges. It's always a rolling number that you're trying to, and that's why I say it's kind of a sine curve around this targeted number of people required to do the work. With regard to how much does it cost if Joseph Medic is not here today, and we have to backfill that spot. Well, what day of the week is it? Is that a Monday? Is it a Tuesday? And so whoever's going to come in, well, let's say it's a Thursday, right? And so they've already, this person would have been working their second shift on Thursday, but the person who comes in, it's their first shift of the week. So actually that could be cheaper, right? Because they're going to be on straight time. It is an overtime slot, and the person who comes in is going to work overtime. Well, then now what's the difference in their pay rate? Because it's just marginal, right, between their hourly rate. They're both getting paid overtime. So you can see that when James uses the term nuance, I'm going to use the word complex, to the point that when we budget this, we really kind of budget from that macro level. We're going to increase by 5% this year, because I just can't build an algorithm to budget for those kind of nuances of who's going to be out on a given day and when, and who's going to replace. Could be a part-time person that never has overtime. And so it's very, very difficult to get to a very micro-specific answer. It's not because I wouldn't want to, because I'm pretty data-driven. I would love to have that, but it's just I don't know how to do it.
And he tried hard to do that by truck. And could you talk about intermittent versus block FMLA?
I didn't, but I do want to one more thing that James was showing you in terms of the financial statement. And you saw regular pay and you saw overtime pay. That overtime pay is only the premium portion of the cost of the hour. It's the halftime. So, you know, if they worked 45 hours during a week, 45 hours of regular time appeared in regular pay, and 5 hours of halftime pay appeared in the overtime. So that's just something when you're looking at, just to understand what that's saying.
And so I don't think any of us want you to have to spend hours and hours on a report that may or may not be accurate or give us the clarity we want. However, when we run, it's not just about the overtime. I thought the overtime might give us clarity into how short you may be running, because that affects your personnel. It affects their stress levels. It affects a lot of things about how they feel. If they feel overworked, if they feel like they're always running short on crew or shuffling to get, that's the kind of questions we're wanting
sure.
to know. How you can present that to us on a monthly basis. But it's really what we're asking.
I'll take it back. I think I can maybe help. And then maybe once you see this, we can collectively decide what we want it to look like. This is the August board book, and it's in every board book. And then
did
there's
you switch off of the thing that we can see.
Yeah. Does it kick this off? Yeah. So now it points your attention up to the screens. I'm sorry, because once I take over,
push that button again. It's like that little Velcro stuff on the back of your screen.
Why you do that?
Just feel.
Okay.
Okay. Got it? It's got a little Velcro piece on it.
Oh. For the day.
Got it? Okay.
Did it pull up?
I think we're good.
Okay, perfect. So this is the August board book, and under the EMS section and in previous board books, there will always be a section that says staffing. And then in staffing, it will say deputy chief, there's currently 3, no change, no openings. District chief, 16, no change, no openings. Captains, 13, no change. In charge, 95, decrease of 5, 14 current openings with 10 employees currently in the promotional process attempting to promote. And then we do that. Chief Seek provides that information by rank, by position in the board book. And we can turn that into a graph. We can turn that into a pie chart. We can turn it into however
that
it is.
Nice.
However it is.
We just want to see where it.
How it's trending month to month is what I think that you're,
yes.
what you're asking.
Yeah. And I think.
I get you to acknowledge Mr. Shirley.
Mr. Shirley, would you acknowledge you're here?
I'm here.
At 3:24.
And then although we don't have the graph to track overtime by person. Chief Seek has a very detailed graphic Excel spreadsheet of every day when we convert a truck, when we need to shut down a truck, every day. So when we go from 38 to 36 or 38 to 40, why, what was the reason, what, where was it at? I mean, every day, every, for the whole entire year.
So I think we want to get after that here in a minute. I just want to close out this current conversation.
Sure.
So I think from my perspective, and I love this, I do look at this. I think the piece that I'm personally missing is, okay, what's the amount of time it's going to take to get healthy? So
okay.
If it says 10 in the promotional process, how long does the promotional process take?
Now, he did send some documents that showed what the pipeline was for each
thing.
For each
okay.
one, yes. I don't know if you didn't get that. I figured you got it at the last meeting. I was absent, so he emailed it to me.
Okay. I will have to relook and see if I have that.
I sent you the same email, but
okay.
I think I know. I'll show you what
okay.
I think what we're,
so
what we're talking
I,
about.
So I think for me, also, so we say that we've just completed a class. Is the expectation 30 days and somebody, and we've got another crew, 60? I'm just trying to.
Well, and that's, I think that's really part of this whole question is, we don't want to hire 100 extra people, right, if we don't need them. We also, again, it affects your personnel.
It absolutely
when
does.
You run short.
Absolutely.
We also don't want you to run so lean that you're stressing out your employees because
sure.
they always feel under the gun because there's not enough workers.
Sure. We have the same goal.
Yeah.
We have the same goal.
I think for us, I think if we could get your help in displaying that information in a way where we can take a glance at it and it's
and grasp it.
Yes.
Sure. So if we're showing like these current openings, we can show that potentially by October 1st we could have 8 new in charges, 13 people released from new hires, so you can see when we're going to
yes.
fill.
Just come up with something and we'll keep tweaking it and trying until okay. we're like, yes, okay, we can clearly see it now.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you have any questions?
I think you want to talk about your percentage of your time.
Okay.
Talk about
so the next
six minutes yeah. is coming up next. Okay.
So I think
okay.
the next piece, and we were.
I moved my stuff around.
Okay.
Because he walked in. I have my stuff in this chair. Here we go. I got it.
Okay.
The next one. We already talked about D, how many employees are working from home, and we'll take a look at that. It's good to know that it's not pick and choose or, it, you know.
And it's 43 total. 12 of those are 100% at home.
43.
That's at the bottom of the
sheet. Okay. Okay. So we can move past D unless anybody has questions about that. E. So Bob may understand it, and maybe Charles understands it, but I don't, Tanya don't. We want to understand the levels. So it's like when a hurricane's coming in. Is it yellow? Is it orange? Is it green? What is the color of the level that you're at different times based on being shorthanded? Are based on the workload being so
back
high
we're
that
about.
You're not meeting needs. And
level
stuff.
8 or less.
Yeah, I just want to understand what
okay.
the levels mean.
So as far levels when we're operating today, how many trucks are in service, and when we get to level, what we would refer to as level 8. Is that's what, okay. We can certainly do that. Seek, you have some graphics on. We have some graphics, but I'll explain how it works in general. So however many trucks we're staffing for the day, 38 trucks is our goal. Depending on how many calls we get in an hour, depending on how many units are at the hospital, depending on how many trucks are in service, we really start to all hands on deck, for lack of a better analogy, when we get to level 8. Level 8 means we have 8 ambulances in service to cover 1,100 square miles, which means we got to be moving because that's a lot of geography to cover with 8 trucks. That's the simplest definition of it. Now, what we MCHD everything, which means we add our own twist and definition to it. Level 8 is counting ambulances in service, but it does not count BLS trucks, the trucks that have two EMTs. We don't count those trucks. We're counting trucks who can immediately be available to go to a high-level call. So we can buy our alarms going off on our phone, be at level 8, and then really be at level 12. And then we track how long we're at or below level 8 every day, and then we quantify it every month. And it was in the same board report. So it will say for all the hours last month, we were at level 8 1.83% of the time, which is very low. Our goal would be 3% or below.
The best we'd like is some kind of clarity about when, and also, like, at what level do you start getting concerned? Is it 5 or is it 6?
It's at 8.
It's 8.
It's 8?
It's at 8.
Okay.
It's at 8.
You don't start getting concerned until 8.
So, and the reason we track percentage of the time that we're at or below level 8 is because if we're at level 8 and we drop to level 8, it may be a minute later someone is cleared from the hospital, they're back in service. Now we're at 9. Then we get two calls at the same time. Now we're at level 7, and then two other trucks come up, and we're at level 8 again. And then we go down to level 7, and then we finally get up to 10, and it stays there for a while. So if we counted the number of times that we were at level 8, I don't think that would be as important as the amount of time we're at level 8, because it fluctuates at the level 8 area.
Just no. Like some clarity
sure.
about how often it happens and
sure.
you know, that we're in more of a stressful situation.
Do you want to keep that in a graph? Because it is in the board book, the percentage of time.
It's in there?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up now. Okay. Just we're going back and
but
forth between
like
our...
I would like a description, something written about the levels.
Sure.
What each level means, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Definition.
Yeah.
Definition.
So it says under July EMS.
I'm sorry to interrupt. And also, we have a plan for what we do when we get to level 8, you know, how we post. And so that gets pretty granular, but we can also show you that information.
If we walk through the July performance, it will say incident volume, so increased by 424 compared to year over year. Mr. Johnson's big about us explaining compared to what. He says it all the time, compared to what. So we try to give you some other number to compare it to. If we go down to the fourth bullet point, it says low-level conditions, 1.77%, which although we were busier in July than we were the previous July, our low-level number was less because we had more trucks compared to last year to this year.
Low-level is anything 8 and under?
8 and under. Yes, ma'am.
And 1.77%, is that of the month? Or is that a day? What is the percent of?
It's the month. So if you take how many hours there are in a month, legitimate hours, 24 hours times 31 days, what percent of those hours were we at low levels? So 1.77, which we can provide really like a, it's more like a data EMS dictionary so that these things that you can reference when you're reading the report.
So if you want to know about risk, you know, anything that we get below level 8, you know, that is a definition we've set up for risk. The real risk is when we get to level 0. We don't do that very often at all, but that's a very risky time. So how do we manage level 0, and how often is that an issue? And that may be something that you guys want to look at with us at some point in the future.
Yeah, kind of what brought this to my mind was when we were here on the budget meetings and we went up to Alarm and we saw on their wall they were taking in calls and there were times that there was nobody to take in calls, so I know there was contingencies for that, but it was very interesting to be able to see that there was real-time tracking for call volumes and stuff, so we figured there had to be something similar that was easy to digest as far as how often
Sure. One of the things that makes it so variable is, I mean, how many trucks do we have that can't get out of the hospital? Also, you know, there's how many trucks are empty, but the bigger problem is when we get calls where we get multiple calls at one time, and it really takes lots of resources at one time. That really peaks the system.
Yeah, just for a little clarity, so that's 8 in charge trucks or less. We may have some additional attendant paramedics or EMT trucks up that time, and along with support units for this, district chiefs, a deputy chief, and some squads. So there's still some capacity there. That said, over time, it has trended less because we've been able to add units. We've gotten more efficient in our operations, but we also do track that by hour of day. So we can tell you Thursdays and Fridays evening, that's when we're most likely to go low levels. And that's what we build our deployment plan on, as we look at that chart and say, well, this is when our calls happen. This is when we know we need the extra units. And that's how our peak trucks and our EMT trucks, that's how they're scheduled to capture that demand. Where we run into problems, because there's always the cost of readiness, is that it's tough to capture 30 or 35 incidents in 1 hour, knowing that 2 hours later you may do 10. So there's that. And then there's hospital throughput problems, but there's also some HR issues that keep trucks out of service, trucks break down, things like that. Like, it's one big pile of I guess, variables that impact that number, but it has trended down over time.
So I think from my perspective, that to me is a really important number, and how can we highlight that more during either a board meeting or on a graph or in some way where that jumps out at us, and then tracking trends, because yes, something like that.
And Ms. Peacock, typically I track year over year, and the reason I do that is because EMS call volume is seasonal. So comparing, let's just say, January to April, those are two separate months. So we compare April to April because typically the patterns do follow. This year has been a little atypical, where we've seen some 6th and 7th and 8th month increases year over year. We're usually in the 3-5% range. This year it does tend to get busier at certain times. So it's very important, like you say, staffing and making sure not only are we finding that number that we need today, but we're planning forward for what we need in January when we start adding resources.
Yeah, because I don't think the county's going to quit growing. So
I don't think so anytime soon.
Not going to decrease.
Yeah, so and we also know that Chief Seek keeps up with these things, but he knows on the average we're losing about 6 medics a month. Or is it five a month. So we're losing 60 medics a year. So before we start planning anything, before the year starts, we've got to plan replacement for those people. And you say, well, that's great. Let's just keep them all forever. But, you know, I've always had a philosophy, and I think this has helped us with our turnover and with our morale. I think that we need to be the place you want to work as long as you want to work it. But if you have a spouse that gets a great deal or you want to go try something else, I encourage that you do that, because I want people to work here who want this to be the place that they work. And I think that that is important. It may bite us sometime, but having people who are not happy at work is a lot of work for everybody who works with them.
Well, it's a thing to every person that works here.
Sure.
What drives them to stay or
sure.
not stay. It can be very, very different for each person. Okay, so we're going to get something on the levels. So
yeah. Is this chart that's pulled up now okay for that? It does month by month, and then the percent of time at low levels on the left.
I like that better, but I...
You like this chart better?
I do, but I don't know how you all feel about it.
We can try anything in the report. I feel bad because we do the report and it's a lot of words, and I'm like, well, if we put pictures, it's going to look like a kindergarten book and we're just trying to fill it with pretty pictures. But pictures sometimes are more digestible and explain the story better than a bunch of bullet points. So, I mean, we're really happy to make the report be what you want it to be. It's for you and the community. Yeah, it's not for us.
And that's part of what Tanya and I talked about, was making the monthly reports. Y'all put a lot of effort into it, and we really want to hone down what means the most to the board and how you
sure.
can help us know what's going on in your life, you know,
sure.
every day. And so
I appreciate that.
It's going to be a long process, but we figured we'd tackle it and start working. Okay.
Yeah, this is great, because what happened in June of 24?
Good question. It wasn't there.
Barrel.
Barrel.
Yeah, barrel. Yeah.
Well, that's the first month of summer.
We had a big storm. That was the problem.
Oh, was there a big storm?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're already producing this, then you're not making an extra report.
Yeah. Right. So is this also in the reports and we just didn't recognize it for what it was?
It's been in written form. So we'll transition to
That'd be great.
No, ma'am. The data team, they generate low levels every month. Then I just add them to an Excel and I just make the
awesome
report.
Okay. That sounds great. So there was a question that was put in there by one of us that says, how many shifts are understaffed by location? Does anything show us that? You know, and how often it happens? Again, we're trying to understand your daily life.
Yeah, so when it comes to my location, I can tell you that District 1 Conroe area, this area here in District 2, they're the most worrisome for staffing. We tend to staff better in District 4 and District 3. That said, I break it down by shift. And what I can tell you is, and we have multiple shifts here. For preferences on debit day A, we have one in charge opening, B, 2, C, 3, D, 4, and then peak A, 2, peak B, 2. So we have 14 there. And then on the attendant, I'll just go debit day first, A, 3, B, 4, C, 3, D, 5, peak A, 1, peak A, 2, and then none on peak C, peak D, we have one that's 18. That said, we do have some buffer staff built in place for the attendant paramedics, so we have extra EMTs, not really extra because they're backfilling those. We have four of those on A shift, four of those on B shift, two on C shift, and D on 3 shift. This doesn't account for the 27 EMTs that we have in training and the 12 paramedics. So they'll be able to backfill, because when it comes to our attendant paramedic, I think one thing that I need to say there is we have positive and negative attrition is what I call it. We have negative where they exit the organization, but we also have several that promote out of that position. So we're constantly filling that role with either EMTs or paramedics because we have people promote. For example, we've had about 14 promotions so far this year. We have 12 in the pipeline now. We'll have an in-charge academy in October. And so we're hoping to keep the pipeline flowing so we can produce enough where we can have most in-charge trucks as we can available. Last year we promoted 31. So we knew we got some work to do. There's some timing. And it really depends on, because at 30 months we do require that at least the attendant paramedic makes the attempt. That's in their hiring agreement. If they're unsuccessful, we just give them a training plan and they circle back. What we're finding is that most of them attempt ahead of time, but we're also, because of just the scale of the organization now and the pace that we've grown, promoting 30 may not be enough. And that's where, when we get to unit conversions, I'm happy to explain all of that and where we're headed with that.
Mr. Hood, would you recognize that you're here?
Robert Hudson's here. I wasn't sure if I was going to be here now.
3:42.
Thank you.
Okay. Do y'all have anything else on Section E? Okay.
I think for me, again, I think the EMS division report provides a lot of information, and I think it's really good information. I'm just wondering, is there a way that it can be displayed where the most important thing pops out at us? I don't have an answer for that right now. I don't. But
I think it's just going to be a process.
Yeah.
I think the more we dig in, the more we're going to see what we don't know, you know.
Sure.
And then need to understand.
Yeah.
And it may be good to spend some one-on-one time with Chief Seek or Chief Campbell once you guys have studied this and you sit down, and then we can come up with a process where we can give you the information you need. And you can understand where that information is coming from so you can feel comfortable that it's being vetted properly.
So I don't have it memorized, but what are the different kinds of units that you send out?
Okay, so we have three types of units right now. We have an in-charge unit, an attendant paramedic unit, and an EMT unit. I would like to rewind and just say an EMT, two EMTs, what we call a BLS truck.
Okay.
And so in the state of Texas, A paramedic's a paramedic. Agency, we have different levels. District chief, in charge, and then attendant paramedic.
Those are different levels of attendant paramedics.
Those are different levels of paramedics within MCHD, not within the state. The state considers a paramedic a paramedic. I've been at MCHD since 2013. I can count on less than one hand how many times we've been fully staffed and in charges. It's been hard to grow them and staff them. We have the business intelligence now through our data department to find those low acuity calls and to keep units in service, send the medics on those, things that they can handle. And if it hits a determinant that they can't, alarm recognizes that, and we send them help in form of a squad or a district chief. And that's the overall strategy moving forward, because we know and able to expand EMS service delivery, the in-charge model is going to constrict that. We can't train fast enough with attrition and just needing to add two or three units every year. So those are our three levels that we have now. And there's one question, and do you want me to explain how we decided to convert a unit?
Yes.
Okay, so unit conversions happen out of necessity. What that means is we have call-offs. So we'll average three call-offs per day. However, it may be none today and then seven come Saturday. It just averages out that. Whenever we need to fill vacancies, instead of shutting that truck down, we will take an attendant paramedic, move that attendant paramedic, and staff that truck as an attendant paramedic truck. So they're still providing service hours. You request a 90 days worth of data, about 1,300 hours is what we've been able to not shut the unit down and provide service in that time frame. We do provide them a lot of oversight. We have a navigator, what we call an EMS navigator, which is an in-charge paramedic credentialed employee, and alarm. They're reading calls or getting extra resources to trucks as needed. Or in some cases, the call's coded a little higher than what it should have been by the alarm department. They're able to read it because they have clinical experience and say, no, it's okay to send the EMT truck or the attendant paramedic truck so we can keep that in-charge truck in service for the time sensitive emergencies.
James, would you talk to call-ins, because they don't always happen prior to the shift. Some people call off mid-shift.
We do have a lot of variability within the schedule. It can be some call-offs before. It can be several go home during the shift. It really just depends. And it's for multiple things. I mean, you know, it's a very tough job out there. So there are injuries that happen. So staff have to leave, you know, also personal emergencies happen. But it is variable throughout the day as far as staffing and day to day a lot of times. I mean, we depend on 84 people to come to work between transport units, district chiefs, squad, and deputy. That's 84 people. We build our model. Yes. Per shift. We build our model with a little resiliency. We're built on 39 units per day, Monday through Saturday, and then because call volume does go down on Sundays, we staff 37. What we do to try to get to that 39 with our resiliency is we have debit day staff. So every 32nd day, those employees that are working their debit day, they provide an extra day that's not on their home assigned station. We put them in vacancies, or in this case, we have medics 17 and 36 where they're not built into the system as units that we depend on, but they're there to cover the call-offs. So we have two units that are made to cover call-offs, and in the happenstance like today where the staffing is stable, we get two extra units to serve the community, and those were scheduled hours because it was our debit day. So that's how we try to plan for that. As we get into majority of our staff that we have in training now, October 8th and 9th are the days that majority of them are going to have their last shift. Once we get into that time frame, then we'll start seeing that stabilize, and we'll have either medic 17 and 36 more up than we have in the past, because we'll have the staff to cover those, because right now we are having to use them to cover just some regular vacancies within the shift.
I have a question. I'm just trying to do public math. So 39 units a day, so that's 78 people. And so the 84 people to be fully staffed, that's the district chiefs?
That's one squad, four district chiefs, and a deputy chief.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
One thing that also that Chief Sieg has done is in the past, a lot of times we would have somebody who's not assigned to a unit, and they'd end up being a third rider on a truck. Chief Seek has built these extra two units so that we minimize third riders as much as possible. And instead of taking down a truck that's supposed to be staffed, he's staffing a truck that's not necessarily planned for, so that we have extra resources on those few times that we have additional people available to work.
So, can LARM run a report so we can develop a baseline metric? I think that was your question.
Yeah, I think that was regarding the levels initially.
But LARMs aren't really involved in levels, right? Do they have their own levels?
They have staffing levels like the field has, minimum staffing levels. They do play a key role when we are at level 8 because they are responsible for moving trucks around to be in the right areas. But we didn't know if you wanted to know what their staffing levels are like similar to the field.
We also wanted to know that.
Okay, we can develop that.
What their staffing levels look like.
Yes. So we'll do staffing, and then we'll add that to the board report.
We're going to go to G. How many of each type truck were scheduled to be in service in January versus how many are we currently trying to schedule?
We have kept our 39 units per day. We started out very strong in the year. We've had some attrition. So right now we've been 38 for the month of August and July. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still, in my mind, underperforming. We're 3 more trucks than we had this time last year, but not the goal that we had of 4. And what we did in January is we added one 24-hour unit. Well, we really added the 24-hour unit in Medic 16 in December. And then in January, we added one peak squad and then 3 peak EMT units. So we grew 4. We've been able to fill 3 of those about 50% of the time.
H, is there a report that tracks when units are reassigned? So it's going to take me longer than this meeting to be able to understand your different trucks and what's required to be on each truck, and then when you need to trade people out, who do you trade out, what makes that decision, and who can fill in for who. And so it's going to take me a while to understand that. Is there anything that you actually have documented that explains the conversion and the process and the reasoning?
I have a guide for the schedulers and the deputy chiefs to follow as far as unit conversions, and then it's also in our BLS guideline as well.
Okay, could you send that to me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Do you have anything else over there on H?
I have an alibi on G. Real quick. So I'm looking at... Real quick, I know in the board book a dispatched incident review chart is provided, and I just want to make sure that I'm clear. So if there's 39 trucks, I think the challenge is trying to fit all the data in one line. So it looks like we get a snapshot of 24 trucks, and so the other trucks that aren't on there, are they in the other category, or are they in the ALS ambulance category, or is there a way that we can see the whole thing?
We can go to multiple pages, right, Michael?
Yes.
Donna, do we have to pause at 3:55 or not?
Yes, ma'am, we should, because I've got to get set up. So you've got a couple more minutes.
So this is the report, and you're saying it gets jumbled, right?
So I think it depends on the month whether that gets, right. I don't know, I'm looking at February 26th, and where the chart isn't, I like that, if that's what we've been doing more recently. I don't want us to go over, I apologize, but.
This is a chart that we've had for probably the last 10 years, and as we've grown, it's been getting harder and harder to fit everything on one page. Our previous discussions, I still have plans to update this so that everything can be clearly seen. And if you're comparing February till now, especially like in April, you'll see variation in the number of units that are displayed there, because when we have special events, we'll have, you know, maybe ATV 1 through 18 as part of that special event that do show up on that report. That's why we have an other grouping and special event of things. So we have plans to make this clearer and easier for you to read.
Thank you.
Do you want to go ahead and
3:55. We're going to recess the committee meeting until after the scheduled board meeting.